Welcome everyone through all time and space to an all-new episode of Weebs on the Weekends, a podcast where we break down the anime news highlights of the week and give a retrospective look at anime that premiered 10 years ago. Today's episode, we'll be talking about 2013 anime Attack on Titan with our special guest, Eric Martinez. Now, like before, this is just a one-on-one interview, so welcome to this new format, Eric.
Hey, thank you for having me back. I am excited.
Yeah, I'm really excited too, because I didn't know if it was something I did subconsciously, but we had you back, or your first episode was on Sword Art Online, which is also a anime that's continuing past its like 10-year anniversary, and now we're talking about Attack on Titan, which is still going on. So it's kind of a good consistency that you're probably going to be our returning guest for, like, you know, animes that have been extended past their, you know, quote-unquote deadline, or, you know, their kill point. So, very excited to talk about this, because Attack on Titan is such this monumental pillar in the community that there's so many things to talk about, but where we're going to talk in a retrospective way about it is, like, what hot takes do we have about it? And, like, was it something that has developed over time? Has it let us down? Is it overhyped? But starting off, I think we have two opposing, maybe, hot takes. So let's save that for later. So I thought I would present to you some other hot takes that the community has and see where you feel about those hot takes before we get to yours.
Yeah, let's go.
All right. Sweet, sweet, sweet. So a little background on Attack on Titan. As it stands right now, there are 88 episodes. It premiered back on April 7, 2013. So we're just over the 10-year anniversary, but that's okay. So the first animation studio that handled it was Wit Studio, which handled the first three seasons and switched over to MAPPA for its first fourth season, or the final season. Yeah, the final season. Yeah, final season. Some other of the notable production team members was director Tatsuro Akari, who also directed Death Note and High School of the Dead. And the music director was Hiroyuki Sawano, known for a lot of his mech work, but also known for the Sawano drop. So if you see that in Gundam Unicorn, as well as Kill la Kill and then Noah Zero. Basically a story where humanity has been put behind walls. So we're talking about season one specifically, because it's really hard to summarize. It's hard to summarize where the story goes, but basically the main character, Eren Yeager, has vowed to eradicate these humanoid man-eating creatures known as Titans, and that's basically it. So most interesting with the character of Eren, especially with how he is now in the 2021 or 2022 Crunchyroll Awards, he was nominated for both protagonist and antagonist of the story. And I was like, oh, this is the death of Crunchyroll Awards, because that doesn't make any sense. How can someone be an antagonist and protagonist? So our first hot topic is Eren wasn't interesting until the fourth season. Do you think that's a hot take or not?
I really don't, because Eren, the story happens to Eren. Eren, at the very beginning of Attack on Titan, is just a whiny little bitch. That I don't really know another way to say it. Like, from episode one, all he does is whine. But more importantly is that he whines without any real understanding of how to make the things that he feels are being done to him, how to change them. You know, like in the first couple of episodes, we see the wall get destroyed and his mother is killed, and he's like, oh, I'm going to eradicate all the Titans. I'm going to blah, blah, blah. I'm going to be this awesome, you know, force to be reckoned with. And he never really is until he gets the Super Saiyan power up, basically. But he does it without really any of the work. So yeah, I never thought Eren was an interesting character in the show, because all he does is just scream about how he's going to kill all the Titans. I'm like, okay, bro, just give me somebody with some actual character depth, because I already figured out what you are. You're literally just going to be the Goku who has to constantly power up to move forward. But that's not really interesting, like, character or story-wise.
Right. And what I kind of group all these hot takes under is something that I didn't know until I started doing a little bit more deep research into, like, the anime community at large. It's like, a lot of people consider Attack on Titan mid. You know, using that as just like a, you know, nomenclature nowadays of just being middle of the lane, which I don't really agree with. But, you know, when you break down like the different elements of the story, you're like, oh, this is what people have a problem with. So let's talk about that. So like Aaron being an uninteresting character and being, you know, the annoying character, I was like, aren't all shonen protagonists annoying in their own right? So I don't actually see that, the validity in that like critique. It's like, okay, he doesn't have like a good place of starting because he's going against this force of nature and these titans. Like, what is the main character really supposed to do in this situation but put on some like medieval or futuristic maneuver gear and slash, it's like figuring out how the world works. And it's annoying in the sense of, I don't know how to combat the world, but I'm just angry. So I thought it was a little bit more of less annoying for that reason. But is that actually a good way of seeing him?
I think that is a good way, because I don't take Aaron as annoying. So I agree with you. I agree with you that most shonen protagonists are annoying. Like Naruto, at the first 150, 200 episodes, is annoying as hell. Like, all he does is just scream about believe it. And it's just like, bro, I totally agree with you there that most of the time the main person is annoying in these stories. But no, I don't think Aaron is annoying. I think he's toxic, but that's not an annoying, I don't think that's not an annoying trait. Cause yeah, just like you said, like there's anger there, but it is at least understandable of why he is angry. And yeah, it never came off as annoying. Cause yeah, I view it as actually being a toxic person. He's a toxic character. Terrible behaviors from the very beginning.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. Maybe toxic is the more appropriate adjective, because another like side take to this hot take is that Kirito is a better MC than Aaron, looking at, you know, the two flagships of this new generation. It's like when Crunchyroll was being launched and when Toonami was coming back, it's like Attack on Titan and SAO or Sword Art Online were the two pioneers of like getting the West re-engaged with anime and the anime community and like sparking up a new generation of anime fans. So like a side hot take is that Kirito is a better MC than Aaron for that reason. Do you think that's true?
Yeah. Oh man. Yeah. After we spent a long time dissecting Sword Art Online, probably I do agree with that. Kirito at least is not. Yeah, Kirito, I don't know if we want to go straight into the end to point out the main flaw in Aaron, but...
I have a follow-up hot take to that, so we can leave that for a little bit later.
Yeah, we'll leave that one then. I think so. I think Kirito is a better MC, but not by much, because honestly, Kirito doesn't... Well, actually, you know what? Here's one of my thoughts on why Aaron is just blah. He doesn't actually, well, no, that's not really true. He does end up training finally, like halfway through the season. He finally is like, oh, I actually need to put some effort into my anger, not just let my emotions carry me through. Now, I would still call Kirito better just because he has actual compassion for the people around him. Like they're in somewhat similar states of very bleak, like very shockingly bleak situations, and Kirito certainly rises above the situation that he is put in compared to Aaron, who basically sinks into that situation.
Gotcha. Yeah, because I was thinking about the whole suffering main character because of that, because like Aaron is suffering and he's in a world of suffering, and you know, if you look to parallels, of course, with Berserk, that you know, Guts does not take not his anger out on people, but he is stoic in his anger. And yeah. I think that's something that's missing in Aaron's character, is that I think you did say like he's a whiny bitch about it, which again, it's like that doesn't endear you to the character. And then when you equip him with his incompetencies or his, yeah, like you said, his toxic characteristics of like feeling inferior to Mikasa, who's stronger than him and more, you know, physically talented than him, and then Armin, who is intellectually better than him. So he's like kind of sitting in this weird, I'm not the main character bubble with his other like co-leads. And that's just reflected in his character. Like himself is like, oh, I'm self, not self-deprecating, not yet, but he's like, oh, I'm expressing this idea of strength when I don't have anything to back it up with.
Yeah, that is it exactly, is that there are two foils that he is constantly with that are kind of showing him where he lacks, but he doesn't, he stops at the whiny stage. He stops at the, oh, life isn't fair. You know, Mikasa is just stronger than me, and Armin is just smarter than I am. He just kind of stops there for way too long, I feel, before he actually tries to do something about it in more than just a, I'm going to yell and be angry. Now, granted, this is still kind of looking mostly at season one, though, because again, like halfway through, we do start to see him make a couple of strides to his MC-ness, quote unquote.
Exactly. And I think it's also, well, specifically with Aaron, I think it does matter about the audience viewing him as well, because I didn't watch, okay, so just back history of how I watched Attack on Titan. I saw the first episode 10 years ago, and then I immediately stopped watching it. Because I am so, and I've said this multiple times on the podcast, is that I'm so adverse to gore and just absurd violence out of nowhere. And what happens to Aaron's mom at the end, I'm like, oh, okay, cool. Never watching this again. Never picking up this again. Oh. And then when season four was announced, I was like, okay, I'm 8 years older now. I'm out of university. You know, maybe I need to sit down and watch Attack on Titan. So I watched all three seasons prior to the fourth one. Like, just binge watch them, and I'm like, oh, okay, I get it. And even watching it like that, like binge watching the first three seasons like that, I kind of understand why people dislike the show so much. And I was like, oh, if you were watching this over the span of those 8 years, I can see where the frustration comes from. So with your own viewing history of Attack on Titan, do you think that's like sound reasoning? It's like, oh, if you were watching it week to week or month to month or year to year, you're like, I'm a little bit more jaded. Or when you compress it down, watches this later back to back, you're like, oh, this is a lot more digestible.
So, oh man, it is. I love that you bring up Aaron's mother being killed and the violence of it. I'm gonna circle back around to that. So, I actually read I don't remember what chapter it was. I mean, this was a decade ago, but I read Attack on Titan before ever watching it, and then I watched the first season. And then I watched an episode, maybe two, of season two. And then I was just like, meh, this isn't really doing anything more than the manga. And I fell off of the manga, too, at that point, because I was just like, this is really hard to actually keep up with. Like, I don't actually care about most of these people. And if I do, like, there's not a point to caring about anybody except like maybe this core, like four people, because everybody else is going to die. And that's not really interesting. So actually, I think your viewing is actually pretty accurate to how a lot of people, I think that it is how people should do it. You should compress it, because if you have to waiting the weeks, the months, just like you said, nah, it couldn't hold me. Like it didn't have enough oomph in each of the episodes to hold my attention, you know, over the years. And when it comes to kind of circling back to what you said about Aaron's mom dying and that being your kind of off switch, I actually think that is a great example of how not to show violence, because it doesn't. You don't actually see anything except like the blood rain, which I certainly can understand an argument that is way too far. But as far as like actually seeing what happens to her, you never do. You kind of, you know what happens to her, but I feel like it's done very well, because the actual brutal parts, if you will, are all off screen. Like whatever the Titan does to kill her before it eats her, it's off screen. You kind of get the gist that it snaps her neck or something to that effect, but you don't see it actually biting down on her. You don't see it. You know that that's what happens, but none of it's on screen. And I think that is actually one of the big strengths of Attack on Titan, is that it's not like Berserk or Claymore would be another one that I would kind of put into the shock violence at the start category. It doesn't really show it in that first episode, but there are certainly some moments, but for the most part, it's all off screen.
Yeah, that does change a little bit as you go through the series.
And it does. That is very true.
Especially with the female Titan and the dispatching of the Levi squad. Specifically, that's what comes to mind.
And it's one of those where I wish they had kept that kind of artistic language for the violence. Because I honestly think that would have, as far as like the animation goes, I think that actually would have done a lot to kind of bump up my thoughts on the show overall. But the fact that they did just kind of, just as you said, there are moments where they do just devolve into what is basically violence for violence sake. It's like, you guys had it. Like, you had it in this first episode where like I felt everything that was going on, but I didn't have to see it. And then you guys got lazy. Budgets of anime studios is a known issue, and
it was best specifically in demand or in high demand with studios and the pressure that they were putting on the production team. So, you know, it's one of those things of being a informed anime fan. It's like, you can't always get the best, and you know why there's so much, not pushback, but there's so much encouraging of like revisiting old properties and bringing them into modern. Yeah, specifically thinking about Hunter x Hunter, because it's been 10 years since its earlier or its second adaptation. It's like, oh, maybe we can get another Hunter x Hunter adaptation this year or in the next year, because it would be like 10 years. But anyways, back to the hot takes. So I do get that the gore of like you said, like the gore of the first episode is like a turnoff, but it is like beautifully done. And especially when you come back to, again, in the later seasons, you kind of get the prologue to that event and you're like, oh, okay. And the story wraps in about itself, and it's like watching it that way. It's like, okay, I kind of feel a specific way about that scene now that I know what was actually going on behind going the scene on, of that scene. So kind of looping that into our next hot topic is Eren is a villain. And again, talking about the Crunchyroll, villain and antagonist aren't the same thing, but a lot of people think of them as
the same.
But you know, the function of an antagonist is just someone that is opposing the protagonist, while a villain can be the hero of a story. If you look at Tanya the Evil, however you feel about Lelouch from Code Geass, so instances like that, even Einzel Gon from Overlord, they are villains, but they are protagonists as well. So do you think that it's a hot take to say Eren is a villain?
I don't think that it is. That is like one of the most Antarctic takes I think you could possibly have to call him a villain. And also, I do feel that overall, if you take like the whole story, I do see the protagonist antagonist in their actual sense. Because in a lot of ways, Eren is, a lot of his battles are internal. They're with him, his own kind of feelings and emotions. Problem is that he always falls to them. He never actually learns anything. But I don't take it a hot take as Eren being a villain. You just let me know when we like drop the bomb, because that is, I know it's the easiest thing to point to, but it is also pretty clear cut that makes him a villain. But and I guess what I will say is that you see him on that path from the moment he's on screen. He is never a hopeful. He is never cheerful. He is always, always seeped in rage and revenge. So, and those are not typically, those specific variations of those emotions are not typically associated with the hero. of a story. Like, yes, Goku, I always go back to Dragon Ball because it's just boiled down so simple. The story is boiled down so much. But, like, Goku gets angry, but he's never, like, blindly rageful. Unless he turns into a giant monkey, but that's a whole nother thing. So he gets to be a hero because he gets angry, but he channels that in a quote-unquote positive way to defeat the evil. Whereas Eren, man, he just wants to... He wants to fuck shit up.
Yeah, it's a very interesting conversation to have specifically. Sorry, it's a very specific conversation to have about this because a lot of the community... It's one of the one communities that I'm actually participating in that has not ruined the ending of the manga for me. For one, the illustrator and mangaka of the Attack on Titan is Hajime Ishiyama. And he says the anime is the definitive version of his story. It's because he's been interconnected in like a very intimate way of the production of the anime. He's like, oh, my manga failed or has like certain holes in it that I don't see in the anime. And whenever he talks about it in interviews, he's like, if you want to know the most authentic version or the most closely aligned version of the story that I had in my head is the anime. So I was like, perfect reason for me to never read the manga, but also to not read the manga right now. Because if the mangaka says, oh, this is the version of the story I want you to consume, then I'm going to watch the anime. So I'm only up to date to part 3 of the final season. So I don't actually know how the story ends, but...
Oh, man. All right, that's gonna change this conversation.
Okay. Yeah, exactly. So as of right now, and, you know, people listening that... If you're up to date to the story, the whole Eren is a villain or hero thing kind of comes down to what are your thoughts about? Is a hero someone that sacrifices someone they love to save the world? Or is it someone that would sacrifice the world to save the person you love? And there's so much division about if Eren is a hero or a villain. And I'm on the side as the story is right now is that I think as it plays out, Eren is the villain right now.
Yes.
Oh, okay. So that's the obvious choice. That's not the hot
take. No. Like I said, that is such an Antarctic take. Like he is, and he is written that way. And I think, and I'm not even, I think, but in all the things that I've kind of read, that definitely has bothered people because, I mean, yeah, let's kind of get into Eren as being the poster boy for kind of an incel facet of the internet, because he is always wronged by the outside world. Everyone wrongs him. Everyone betrays him, all of this kind of stuff. And he just has to take it. And then he finally gets the power to do something about it. And yeah, like I said, you see that behavior from the very start where he is never caring. He's not really compassionate to Mikasa most of the times that we see him. Just as you said, he has kind of an inferiority complex with her and with Armin. Yeah, oh man, I'm trying to like kind of dance around some of my points because I definitely jumped to the ending.
To justify it. But yeah, it makes sense. Yeah, I'll let you process a little bit more because I don't want to, well, one, spoil it for myself, but also not spoil it for anyone else listening.
Yeah, I was going to say
the exact ending, the exact ending of Attack on Titan, because as it stands like right now, he's activated the rumbling. Again, just to give us a common ground to say what's going on, he's activated the rumbling. He's fused with the founding and, you know, with Zeke to have Ymir under his command. And it's been the case, like you said, talking about the opening and how it wraps back around to how his mom was killed. It's like, okay, so if a hero is someone that sacrifices the one person or the person they love the most to save the world, okay, that's a hero. But that's never been a case in any shonen set, especially with specifically the Shonen Jump's main protagonist set. They never are in a situation to sacrifice someone else versus sacrificing themselves. They're always self-sacrificing heroes. That never seems to be the case for Eren, except for the one time where he jumps into Santa Claus's mouth.
That is true. Yes. But
he does that in a very maybe going back to your adjective, toxic ways, like, oh, I'm the main protagonist, I'm not killable in this situation, or I have all this rage and my rage is going to act as plot armor, which I think one of the best things about the first season is that there was this sense with how he treated Mikasa and Armin that when Santa Claus closes his mouth, oh, he's just done. Which,
He wasn't the main character. Okay.
Right, yeah, he wasn't the main character. And I was like, oh, I can definitely follow Armin and Mikasa because we got to see that Mikasa's like super strong. It's kind of like written into the background. Like her antagonism towards Annie is like she's like the best fighter. Armin is like marching towards the sense of, oh, when they talk about the division of the military police and the regiment scouts and everyone else, it's like, oh, this guy is going to be a commander in the future. It's like, oh, I get where these characters are going. But right. But Aaron is like, oh, he feels like fodder. So even when he comes back, again, not really spoilers, but he comes back as a Titan, it's like, mm-hmm. oh, okay, this is his special thing. He's not special, yeah. but he has a special ability.
Special ability.
I think I like about his character, especially when if you get to the very end, it's like, oh, him being a villain just makes sense, is what you said. It's like, yeah, he wants to be in the Survey Corps. He's a 5 year old, however old he is at the time. He's like, oh, I want to be a military. And that's like, oh, well, that's not the best place to start out with a kid saying they want to go into military service and potentially kill things or risk their life. It's like something's mm-hmm. off about this kid, but it's not even done in a way that you know something off is with Gon. In Hunter Hunter, yeah. because like Gon is raised in a very competitive world, his father has abandoned him and all these things. But Aaron, for the most part, just had a great childhood. You're like, where is all this aggression coming from? Where is he? Doesn't seem to have parents that raised him poorly, so it's like,
yeah,
it's hard to get behind him. And then when he gets into the category of, oh, am I a villain or a hero? He's obviously going to be a villain, and I think that's just yeah. a brilliant part of his character as a written character, but he's also not the best written character either.
Yeah, he's not. And more to your point about how he ends up with in Santa Claus Titan, I like your name for it better than Bearded Titan. Santa Claus Titan's mouth is that like 10 seconds earlier he just went full rage mode and was like, I'm gonna kill this fucking Titan, and doesn't pay attention to what he's doing, and he gets his arm bitten off, or his leg bitten off, and like tumbles through over rooftops. And that's then when he, and like everybody else starts to like get picked apart at that point as well. And it's like, bro, you do not have main character energy right now. Like, I don't know what you're doing. But no, exactly. Like I love your point of like his childhood was not like, well, let's take like Shigaraki. He did not have that kind of childhood to where you're like, you know what? I get it, bro. Like, you murdered your entire family, partly on purpose, partly not. Like he did. He just had a loving family. Maybe dad went away to work, you know, now and again, but he had nothing terrible. The Titans hadn't broken through in over 100 years, so he never knew of like massive Titan violence. And when he first sees the Survey Corps come back from outside the wall, he seems shocked that they basically got their asses handed to them. So I guess he never really even saw that kind of violence or understanding of things. So yeah, it's like, boy, you just were fucked up from, you were messed up from the moment you were born. And this is just how it was gonna, and more importantly is that Mikasa and Armin never tried to stop him from being that kind of a person. Like, they basically just enabled all of his toxic behaviors the entire time. And that's why it's not surprising that he's a villain. People basically rewarded him for it over and over.
And it's very interesting, again, watching it or binging it back to back into the season 4 and then how it's been broken up into 3 parts over the past couple of years, is that the fallout of that enabling is that Mikasa is still in denial about it, which I think adds to her character, at least as written, that her character is like, oh, I saw this maniac grow up and at any time I could have stopped it, or I should have done more. And then Armin's has kind of the opposite response of, oh, I feel that I'm at fault, but also I'm going to keep going along with it as well.
Yes. Yeah.
And it's like, well, Mikasa's the same way too, but she's like in love with him, or, you know, I don't even know how all that romantic tension or that brother's sister sibling thing really fares out in the whole network of the show of itself. But yeah, it's very interesting of the direction that the story went was very shocking and definitely appeals as like one of its most strong selling points. I think the other part of like that being well written, that trio, and like how it doesn't really stand up against, or how it does stand up against other shonen trios, if you want to go to like the originals, like with Naruto, Sasuke, and Sakura, and even in the new generations with Denji, Aki, and Power. It's like, oh, this works is because they feed into each other in a bad way, and that's something hard to sell to people, I think, when you have characters like Reiner, and I guess linking that into the next hot topic so we can move on to something that's not Aaron, is that, is it a hot topic to say, or a hot take, hot topic, is it a hot take, is it a hot take to say that Reiner is the most well-written character?
I definitely, so when it comes to the Titan trio, I feel like that is actually kind of the peak of this of the series, whether that be like manga or anime up to this point, because it is, those parts are well done. That betrayal of that group is, I mean, that's the actual shock. Like, none of the deaths, in my opinion, are all that shocking. Like, you get it from the very first episode, people are gonna die. So if you're shocked by someone dying randomly, like, you weren't paying attention for however many minutes that you've been watching. However, learning that there are humans that turn into Titans, and that they have infiltrated the army, like, that is an actual, like, that is a twist that is worth it. And I think that was what hooked me on season one, was getting to that point. And yeah, I definitely feel that Reinhardt is out of the three, probably the best of the trio as far as kind of his arc and kind of how he got to that point. So I'm not feeling the hot take there.
Right. I think it's just something that gets overlooked because he's the quote unquote bad guy, and you kind of want the well-written characters to be the good guys, quote unquote, again. So I think it's just a hot take because you wouldn't necessarily go to him because you have to think about, oh yeah, he does have this giant character arc. He does have redemption, he has pitfalls, he has this deep psychological trauma, he has history, a childhood, he has like relationships and like all these things that make a great character stand out, but he's so not in the spotlight and you just forget about him. So I think the comparatives of like saying Aaron's a good well-written character, but he's not, you don't know that until like the fourth season, or Armin's a good well-written character, but you don't know that until the fourth season. And same thing, another character that gets introduced later is Grisha. But Grisha, like, as his father, is like, oh, he has an arc as well, but you don't know how any of it really ties into the story until the fourth season. So it's just like one of those things, like, Reiner, you know from the very beginning. So thinking about the other characters too, I guess a little bit more, but yeah, saying Reiner's the most well-written character is probably not a hot take, but it's just like a take that you wouldn't think until someone says it.
Yeah, that part's true.
Yeah. To close off some of the other smaller hot takes, it would be Connie doesn't deserve the hate that he gets, and Levi is overrated.
Oh my god, Levi is so overrated. I'm not feeling that hot take either, because I understand why people think that he is so cool, but what does he actually accomplish? Yeah, like what does he actually accomplish, other than being another person to help Aaron get to the rumbling? You're not cool in my book. Like, you literally helped him on this path, mostly unknowingly, to be fair. Like, none of the characters really knew that's what they were doing, like, in, you know, the first couple of seasons. But you see, like, again, the seed was there from the very start, and yeah, you didn't really do anything to stop it. You honestly just helped it and saved it on multiple occasions.
Yeah, and it's the thing of like just being a cool character. So like he's obviously the coolest character. So like Naruto had its most popularity contest, I think Naruto 99, and like the fourth Hokage was like voted number one. It's like, yeah, he's the coolest character.
Coolest character, yeah.
Yeah, but it's like, okay, so what else is to his character? So you get like a tragic backstory, you get like what caused him to be jaded or the person that he is, and then the whole scenes of like kicking Eren during the trial at the first season. It's like, it's like, okay, we kind of get this character, but also the depth of him just being a sword, I guess, for Erwin, and like, I am the blunt instrument, is like, okay, that's cool, but what else to his character? And I think that's kind of where he falls flat, because he does have all the cool moments. He takes down the Beast Titan. He does his whole Kenny versus Kenny squad. And like, anytime you see like a clip pull from Attack on Titan, it usually has Levi in it. And then he gets bodied in the most avoidable way in season four. Yeah, so it's like, okay, he is overhyped or overrated, but I think it's like people thinking like, oh, equal cool must mean he's properly rated, but that's not always the case. And then
No, that is not.
And the following thing about Connie, I think that Connie and Gabby, I guess, are the most hated characters in Attack on Titan, but they're hated for the wrong reasons. One, Connie is just supposed to be the everyday soldier. He's not special. He's a side character. He's like the perfect sidekick. It's like, okay, what are you expecting from him to do in this world of extraordinary individuals?
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, even like same thing with which happens with like any of the Survey Corps members. You're going to be killed, and just because you like a character doesn't mean the person that killed them is wrong or even bad, or you shouldn't like them just because they killed the person you like. And then same thing with Gabby. It's like, yeah, she is a child soldier, and you was expecting to get some plot armor to protect your favorite character, but that's not her fault. That's not the character's fault. And then the character then chose to grow being exposed to different philosophies or thinking. Like, it's like intrinsic to the nature of hate, that hate isn't something that's static. It's dynamic. It's like, you can learn to love someone that you've hated for a long time. Or same thing is like, you can find fault with a philosophy that you were raised on when you get older or have new experiences. So I think those hot takes are just like, not even that hot. But again, it's like, okay, how do you talk about it in a very constructive way to get around that hotness?
And yeah, and I will say that I guess the point or the theme with all of the hot takes are that the average person who is going to turn on an anime wants to see Levi fuck up some Titans. That's what they want to actually see when they turn on an anime, because that's kind of how it's built, right? Like, that might be the greatest like switch 'em up of Attack on Titan, and probably where a lot of the fans like turned against it, was that they signed up to basically watch people to like get destroyed and then destroy back all of these Titans. Like, that's what they signed up for in the first season, because you don't have any of the what's beyond the walls. Like, you don't know any of that yet. And then it starts turning more and more into this like political pressure cooker that they are placed in, with all of the outside world hating them. And so at some point you're just like, wait, I actually have to think about who's from where and what history was involved with that place. And the history with that place then ties into why the people in this place did this thing. And they just like, turn it off, whatever. I'm just going to watch Levi kill stuff. And, these ordinary peasants, just like you said with like Connie, I don't care about you. You don't do anything special. You're not a cool, you know, you don't have a Titan power. You don't have, Armin's like intellect or anything like that. It's just all these hot takes are basically what I saw on the surface wasn't what, like, all I'm seeing is the surface. I'm not looking anywhere deeper, and boom, that's it.
Again, all those hot takes kind of come under the same category of why people say like Attack on Titan is mid. So to switch into our own hot takes, so we're out of that. So I would say that if saying Attack on Titan is mid is not a hot take, is saying Attack on Titan is a masterpiece the hot take?
Yes.
Okay, okay. And that's my hot take. Or I guess that's what I believe. So I guess that's my hot take, is that Attack on Titan is a masterpiece. So we can circle back to mine, or we can tackle yours, but what's your hot take for Attack on Titan?
My hot take on this is that it's actually just not that good. Like the complete opposite of yours. I really feel like, I don't think Attack on Titan should get as much hate as it does, because just kind of like what we've just been discussing with the random hot takes from Reddit, is that a lot of people hate it for the wrong reasons. They hate it because there's a little bit more underneath the surface than what they're looking for. But at the same time, I'm like, you know what? This really isn't that great of anything. I never thought the animation was really that great. Most of the time, especially in season one, any time that it's not an action scene, I think I'm watching Paper Mario, because of how thick the black outlines are for the characters at times. Either that, or it's like the in Full Metal Alchemist, like whenever there's the, like, someone calls Ed short, you know, it goes into like the super stylized cartoony thick black outline of both of them. Like that's what I think of whenever I see it. So like, to me, the animation really, like, I understand why people think it's good. I didn't at the time, and I still don't. I don't think the main characters are interesting or well written. I don't think they have good arcs. I actually don't think Mikasa and Eren, I don't think they have arcs at all at the end of the day. Now, I definitely cannot go into why I think that for Mikasa, because that is like the end of the series. So I won't go into, we'll kind of have to leave that one where it's at to a degree. But part of it is certainly that love for Eren and everything that she does because she quote unquote, loves him, which, newsflash, you were trauma bonded to this human being. You do not love him. Like, you were in a traumatic situation and he came to try and save you. And that is why you are just like indebted to him. It is not love. Which is another reason I don't think it is that great of a show, because they confuse the hell out of some emotions between characters. That one being my biggest one, Mikasa and Eren, where it is, oh, she loves him. No, that's not love. That is toxic. Like, that is not what we should be striving for. We should not be striving to just devote yourself to a human being who is clearly falling to the dark side. You are the new poster child for supporting an abusive significant other. Padme can go, you know what? She's been redeemed. It's not on her anymore. She's not the one with Anakin. But you know what? I'll leave it there.
It's amazing that, you know, again, looking into this a little bit more deeply, is that I didn't know people didn't think Attack on Titan was good. So, you know, again, compressed viewing or binge watching it, I was like, oh, I watched the, 60 episodes, kind of like over a span of a month. And I was like, oh, this is what all the hype's been about. And then preparing for the podcast, I was like, oh, people actually didn't really like this. And it's like, okay, it's properly rated. There's some, you know, decent criticisms of the series. But literally everything you just said, Eric, is what I love about it and why it's so perfect. And it's amazing that you bring up the Star Wars comparison. And I was like, this is the same conversation I have with friends about The Last Jedi. It's like, there are people that say Last Jedi is like the perfect Star Wars movie. And then there's people that will say, maybe a little bit more of the majority of, they say like, this is garbage. This doesn't count as Star Wars. This past Star Wars day, I'm like, oh, I need to watch Last Jedi again, because I honestly don't get people's criticism. Like, if it's like, oh, if this doesn't work, if you don't like, for example, okay, so the main criticism is like, this is not my loop. And even Mark Hamill, Hamill says that in like many of interviews. It's like, this is not what Luke would have done. And I'm like, no, that's literally what Jedis do. They go into hiding, they make mistakes, they're flawed, they're arrogant. And that's the whole arc of Luke, is that he understood that, and he says it in the movie, that the Force doesn't belong to the Jedi. It doesn't belong to anyone, or it belongs to everyone. That's why that whole ending scene with the kid with the broomstick is like so touching and like the perfect end to the movie. And I think we probably had the same take on The Last Jedi, but I was talking to people that were like, oh, this is so stupid. Like the Canto Bight casino scene is like useless. There's no point of it. They fail. They're losers. Like, oh, Kylo, this whole Snoke buildup was wasted screen time. And I'm like, did you watch the original Star Wars? Do you not know how, you know, this, how Lucas structured his stories to be cyclical and these beats to repeat, because the universe is just like that. It's ever changing, but it's constantly in rhythm with itself. But anyways, not to get into a Star Wars debate, but yeah, like everything you said about Mikasa's like sycophant, that's probably what it is. Like she's a sycophant of Aaron and their kids, and that traumatized her with this, like when they show like, oh, they killed five guys together, and it's like this Harley Quinn Joker kind of build up to their characters. And it's like, what were you expecting once that's revealed? Like all the expectations of like Attack on Titan don't meet people's expectations. And that's what I think people have criticism about. And when it comes down to their writing, it's like, okay, did you want something healthy? Like healthy doesn't mean bad. It doesn't mean poorly written. It just means that that's who their characters are. They're consistent in their characterizations. And I think that's what the mangaka was going for. It's like, these are broken individuals. This world's messed up. How else are you supposed to change a world that's so set against a group of people? And even with like the critical reception of Attack on Titan, if you look at it being banned in China in 2015, which China has only banned, I think, 40 manga and anime up to like the creation of its Ministry of Culture. And Attack on Titan is one of those 40s. And then you go into like the deeper thematic elements of season 4 with like the Holocaust and Jewish imprisonment and how the Germans like treated Jewish people and the whole talk of genocide with that during World War II. It's like, okay, those are parallels. And even with the American, now that I'm thinking about this out loud, like the American, what magazine was it? Oh, it was the New Republic magazine. And they called Attack on Titan supporting alt-right and white nationalist movements. And I'm like, I don't see how talking about something that happened and paralleling it into a story supports it. So it's like, there's so much depth to it. And I'll let you respond. I'm sorry, I'm getting into a tangent. But I think there is so much to talk about that people don't talk about when they criticize a story. It's like, okay, if you don't like, sure, you don't like the tone or the characters, but you can still like, not like things that are good. So it's like, I want to hear more. I want to hear more about what you don't like about it.
Oh man. So real quick with the Star Wars, which of course we've talked about and we've ranked all of the films, and we both agree that The Last Jedi, we agree with The Last Jedi being actually one of the best Star Wars movies, which I know that is a hot take.
Yeah, we're getting canceled. We're getting canceled right now.
Yeah, we are absolutely getting canceled for saying that. But for anybody wanting to cancel me, know that the Red Room fight scene is absolute garbage. So at least don't cancel me over that. I love that you bring up the Joker and Harley Quinn, because guess what? Harley Quinn became an amazing character when she left the Joker. She was just a side piece. She had nothing to offer those stories until she leaves the Joker and tries to change. That is when, like, her one, popularity, but two, just like the interest in her character skyrocketed, because finally you're not just attached as the Joker's eye candy with the purpose of just being another female Joker. Like, you actually have a reason to exist. And so I guess my point for Mikasa and Eren being broken and staying broken and staying broken in the same way for this story is that why would I want to watch four seasons of the same exact thing? Because that's really what it boils down to. You are absolutely right. This is a crappy world with broken people. The world is broken and there's basically nothing that you can do to stop it. Okay. So then why am I going to watch? Like, what is the point then? Like, you've already shown me the end. You've already pointed out what you wanted to prove to me. And you did that within a single season, basically. Mm. You basically showed me, hey, you can't fight against this. This is just the world we are in. People are going to die and there's nothing you can do about it. It doesn't matter what power you get. It doesn't matter who you ally yourself with. You're going to lose. Okay, great. I get it. I got the point of your story. You don't offer anything beyond that, though. You basically just keep repeating the same thing over and over. As new people are brought in, they betray Eren's group, or they help Eren's group against the people that betrayed him previously. Once they go beyond the walls, they basically find out that the entire island population was exiled for sake of trying to save themselves because their king was like, whoa, we're terrible. Let's not be terrible anymore, but let's not be terrible by then being terrible to our people. But that's maybe going a little bit into to the weeds of King Fritz's arc and whatnot. But yeah, I just...
I have so much thoughts. But yeah, so like, I'm glad this is where we're taking this because I kind of see this as being a parallel to Walter White in Breaking Bad. Because have you seen Breaking Bad for one?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Okay.
Yeah, because as you watch Breaking Bad, is it not the same thing? Because if you look at Walter's character, he is exactly the same person at the beginning as he is at the end. He is this self-centered, prideful individual that won't let anyone help him. He's going to make his own path forward and then do despicable things because he values his family to an absurd degree. Well, not absurd degree, but he values his family's survival and health and prosperity over anything that he could possibly do. But it comes from this self-centeredness or maybe God complex. And I'm like, okay, same thing with Attack on Titan. It's like Walter White is a constant. And then you just keep introducing like Tuco's and the Fritz and the other Columbia groups and whatever the final group was, you know, called as a group. But yeah, it's like, okay, if the world keeps expanding and the characters stay the same, is that bad storytelling, or is that just the story showing that the theme is consistent no matter what outside force intervenes?
But Jesse doesn't. Again, you were absolutely right. Walter White, and this is, and I will absolutely say that the hot take here is that most people didn't get that Walter was the same character from on episode one as he was on the last episode. Because you're right, he is always driven by the same selfishness and the same selfish image of what he is supposed to be. He's supposed to be this family protector and, oh, it doesn't matter what gets in my way. But the difference there is Jesse changes, and that alone changes how you see Walt through the seasons, because that is not a constant in Walt's life. That is dynamic. That is changing because Jesse leaves him, or Jesse comes back, or Jesse is forced back. So that dynamic, you get to watch that and kind of see how Walter reacts to that. Mikasa doesn't change. She's always there for him. Armin doesn't change. He's always there for him. I really wish that the final couple of episodes had been out, because this becomes even more. He basically shines a spotlight. And I'm going to do this in as non-spoilery a way as possible. He basically shines a spotlight on the fact that Mikasa and Armin will be with Eren no matter what. That never changes, and they don't really change as the story continues on. And I think that's the big difference between something like this and something like Breaking Bad, because Breaking Bad is well written because, yes, my main character technically does not change, other than the level to which his faults show through, but the things around him do. And my other key character does change. He learns. He actually has things that he takes away from these situations, and he tries to improve himself. And that puts him at odds with with Walter. So, you know, like at some points, Jesse is an antagonist. At some points, he's the protagonist. He changes to help that story get to the ending. Whereas in Attack on Titan, I don't see that with the core.
Oh, for sure. Because again, I just said it, oh yeah, of course they're sycophants, and I didn't really diagnose that with part of their characterization. But yeah, I kind of see, again, binge watching it, looking at the seasons like straight, I was like, oh, where Jesse was that for Walt, Rainer is that for Aaron. Because to say that like he's the most well-written character is because he has mm-hmm. that arc. He has that, oh, I'm a soldier, I'm here to do a job. And then at the end, he's like, yeah. Oh, okay, well, I regret everything I've done up to this point. Worth it. I'm going to put a rifle, you know, piece in my mouth.
Into my mouth, yeah.
And then also recover from that saying, oh, there is this new generation that I can't pass my trauma on to. And it's like, there is in my redemption to end this cycle of hatred or violence and something that I can do. And he's like, oh, I'm going to stand against Aaron because there's a better way. You know, he's the voice of reason that Armin should have been. And again, like, I think one of the criticisms of Attack on Titan as a whole is like, and I think it's fair to say, like, oh, if you were expecting his best friends to side against him, then yeah, that's what feels natural. Because if your protagonist is a villain, then you would expect his friends to be the voice of reasons or to side against him and stand up to him. But if your story is just, oh, we're villains together, we don't change, and treating that trio as a singular individual, then where else do you look for that emotional like withdrawal or that emotional fortress against the main protagonist? And that comes with even Annie when she, soft spoilers, when she breaks out of her crystallization during the rumbling. It's like, oh, she's been awake this whole time, and she's been growing, processing her own past, listening to what's going on in the world, and she changed even to that end when she comes back to be the female Titan. She's like, oh, I'm a different person than I was just the blunt tool at the beginning. The only person that didn't really change or get a chance to change was Barry or Bartholomew or whatever. And I like that. I like that the story was dense enough with characters, like even with something like Gami Akil, when they were just killing off main characters left and right. You were supposed to feel bad, but you're like, oh, they're just all happy, you know, fun-go-lucky people, and it's like sad that they're dead, but it's like, okay, but I'm not really emotionally attached to them really. But like in Attack on Titan, it's like, oh, I'm attached to these people, and I can differentiate how I feel about Annie from how I feel about Mikasa, because Annie changed but Mikasa didn't. So you're not rooting for the Marleyans in that situation, but you're like, well, I'm not rooting for the Eldians.
Eldians, either.
It's like that. That's the kind of story.
You're basically, and that is why, and so I will say that is why I think the Titan trio is, like, that is the shining example of well-written characters in the series. Because I can't get behind a character not changing from beginning to end being a well-written character. So, like, but that's who we spend most of our time with are Aaron, Mikasa, and Armin, and Levi, honestly, too. Like, he doesn't change. His arc is, like we talked about with the hot take of him, is he a cool character? He doesn't really change. Like, all the people that we are spending the most time with aren't well written. Like, there's nothing there. They're just static through all of these events. I mean, I guess you could say that Aaron's arc is one from is similar to Walter White. Again, I think your parallel there is correct, to where the seed was always there and you just get to actually see it like come to fruition. over the course of the series, just like you do for Walt. But it doesn't feel well written in those situations because it doesn't really feel earned. It doesn't feel like it never feels like Mikasa should be supporting him through everything that she has. It doesn't feel like Armin should support him through everything that he has. And it's because you have these other foils who show you that, oh, so people in this world can learn. Like, there are traumatic events in all of these people, in all these people's lives, and they do figure out, like, oh, you know what? This is dumb. I think that's maybe my main frustration.
Yeah, I hear the frustration. It's just like, you're frustrated as a person, but you also know people in abusive relationships that stay in abusive relationships. So, like, when I was watching it, I was like, oh, I get this because I know people that are psychologically damaged or psychologically dependent on other people. It's like, yeah, of course people do that, and this story is bringing that to light. And then you look at moments that, again, feel unsatisfying. So, like, when they choose Armin over Erwin's, like, saving him with the Titan serum. It's like, that's a stupid choice. At that point,
yes.
And looking at, again, characters that are overrated, Armin's overrated. Like, his genius,
honestly,
is
yeah.
never really on display. Like, the only time he gets that credit
past season one, it's not.
Right. The only time he gets that credit is when he figures out, you know, Annie is the female Titan. And spoiler alert, they look exactly the same. And it's like, where was the genius there? And like, that's the unsatisfying part most about it, is because in their incompetency, or like their sycophagia, I guess is the word, with Eren and Armin and Mikasa, they are extended to the rest of the cast. It's like, Mikasa is a Ackerman, but they never really make that connection with her and Levi. Like, she does a lot of epic things, but she's never to the same level as Levi. She doesn't get to that level. Same thing as with Armin being the equivalent of Erwin. Like, he never gets that genius buff or that moment of like, oh, you can figure out things with simple deduction, but it's not genius level. I'm not going to put Armin against Lelouch or Johan from Monster
or
any of the anime
or
big geniuses or L, yeah. So it's like, okay, and then Eren is just whiny bitch boy. So it's like, okay, yeah, sure. If you don't want to root for them, but did not like this. So asking about your hot take, it's like, did the suspense of like, oh, a Titan face being in the wall, or who are the traitors? Like, if Annie was a traitor, okay, there's potentially other traitors, or how is the politics of the city working out against people? And it's like, are people sacrificing Titans, and even the reveal that humans are Titans? Did none of that supplement?
No, it absolutely didn't. So that goes to kind of when I talked about my watch pattern, was I watched season one, and that is after reading the manga and kind of knowing that these reveals were going to happen. I was like, yeah, no, this is awesome. Like, these are actual twists to the story. I'm like, whoa, where does this go? And then you realize that where it goes is really nowhere. Like, it really doesn't actually go anywhere. So, because again, it goes back to the rhythms of, you know what, this is just what the world is. Every single person has an ulterior motive, or if they don't have an ulterior motive, chances are they're going to die, or they had some tragic backstory that is going to explain, why they aren't going to betray whatever group that they are in. And it once those reveals happened, there was nothing else to really, there was nothing else, because it was all the same. You're going to find out that, okay, so Titans are hidden in the wall. Oh man, that's really cool. King Fritz put them there. Oh man, why did he put them there? Oh, he murdered tens of thousands of his own people to put them there as a deterrent to war. But it wasn't actually a deterrent to war, because he never was actually going to use it. But now we are going to use it. And it's like, okay, this is just dumb. Like, I don't, there's nothing there at that point where I'm like, okay, there is a clear line of this is where we're wanting to go with this. Mm-hmm. And instead you're just like, oh, this was all just so that there could be a reason to have a genocide. Woohoo! yay, we killed everybody. Everybody, oh, now what?
Yeah, and I think...
And I can't get into the now what, but...
Right, right, yeah, because I think that's, again, like, again, I think it comes down to, it's like, oh, the story is so well executed on, like, these very, I guess, realistic politics. And I think that's why Attack on Titan's creator and the manga itself is getting so much political commentary about it. It's like, yeah, these are just real world thought patterns that are being played out inside of a, you know, quote unquote childish story or like four kids. And I think that's where it comes down to, is like people, it's not a bad story. It's just like a story that feels real to how stupid people are and how they rationalize certain behaviors or certain actions or how they justify doing bad things.
But should we glorify that?
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's like, just because you write about it doesn't mean you're glorifying it. You're bringing to light that. Yeah. Oh, maybe that was a baby cry. Oh, was that you? Oh, okay.
No. That was definitely me. Finish your thought, though. Definitely finish your thought.
So it's like one of the things of, like, you know, not to get too political, but it's like, okay, should you ban things that discuss ideas? And it never feels, at least as I was watching it, that the mangaka was making a pro case for it versus just telling a story that has those actions or those, the wording, like speeches, whatever it might be going on in the story. So it's like, if you depict something that's bad, are you promoting it? So I didn't know if the conversation around Attack on Titan is political because it's making a clear intent of saying, oh, these are my ideas. These are nationalist ideas. These are pro-genocide ideas. And then that's what I'm trying to get into the community or people to talk about or to consider or to convert or to persuade. But it's just like a story about those things that people shouldn't forget.
So I don't think that he is necessarily glorifying the genocide part. I think, and this actually might be the hot take, because I feel as though a lot of the discussion after the manga ended was to this effect, was saying that he was glorifying genocide. And that's where a lot of the alt-right neo-Nazi kind of comparisons came through of, oh, well, he took his protagonist and made him commit genocide. And, oh, he must be promoting that. That I don't agree with. I don't think that is what's being glorified here. But I absolutely do think that he is glorifying those base instincts and those base emotions that people get hung on, like Aaron. And that's the reason that I made the kind of incel connection there at the very beginning, because that is 100% the energy that Aaron gives off. And no, he is not a protagonist. He is not a hero in this story. But he is definitely glorified by all, like, when he gets the Titan power, he actually starts to feel like an important piece of the puzzle. But of course, there's all of these backdoor dealings to control him and send him this way and that way to do what we want. Or should we just kill him? Which is, I think, what the garrison, or not the garrison, what the military police wanted to do at the very beginning, was just to murder him. It does feel like Aaron gets glorified through most of the story, but he's toxic through that entire time. So that's the part where I'm like, this does not gel with me story-wise. I understand wanting to kind of show these kinds of emotions. Not necessarily the movie Joker, but the character of Joker. Like, there are times where he is glorified, but then there are times where you get to just see that, no, this man is deranged and he exists in the world. Like, maybe not to the, clownish degree that he is in the comics or in the shows or the movies, but those feelings do exist in the world. But we have a foil to show, hey, no, this is not what we are supposed to do. And I think that's where Attack on Titan falls short. Is that we have these well-written side characters, but we never have a foil to really say, like, we need to stop Aaron, and it's the right thing to do. Everyone who wants to stop Aaron is portrayed as, like, sneaky or backhanded, or they're yeah, from the very beginning, like, it's a secret kind of plot to stop Eren, and, oh, we're scared of him. It's never a, yeah, it's just, it's never outright just put out there that, no, he is a problem. He is a problematic character. He is on a problematic path, and we need to stop this.
Got you. Yeah, because, yeah, now that you say that, I'm like, oh, yeah, glorification does inherently need a contrast, so it's not that. So, like, even if you look at, again, the comparison of SAO Sora Online, it's like, yeah, that's the same incel energy that Kirito gives off, but also it's buried under a harem anime and comedy and, like, these other facets to the story that makes it easier to overlook or to not glorify it. It's like, oh, yeah, he's somewhat of a decent person because, like, the harem element is played up as, like, jokingly, it's like, oh, these girls gather around this incel for, you know, male power fantasy escapism. But with Attack on Titan, it's like, oh, well, if you escape into this fantasy, it's a little dangerous. This is the kind of, again, I didn't know it was going to get so political, but now that I'm talking about it out loud, it's like, oh yeah, there is a political identity to what he's doing. That if you enable this kind of behavior, you're asking for trouble. You're asking for deviant behavior or whatever it might be, or however you call that. But yeah, it's very interesting. Like, Eren is not a role model. It's very interesting but it's like looking at these 2010 anime and revisiting them after 10 years. It's like, even though we know that now, as you were watching it as it was premiering, you could say that, oh, I saw these problematic elements, but you didn't know where it was going until the end. And I think that's the whole point of doing a retrospective. It's like, you never know where something's going to lead until you get to the end. And I always assume people didn't like Attack on Titan because it switched genres. Because, like, the first season is purely, like, action-based, it's military, it's like, oh, bad guys are, okay, we know the clear objectives, like, these titans, we need to exterminate them, they're clearly the bad. Then it gets into, like, a psychological thriller, political drama, and then it's like, and you can kind of say, like, oh, it went all downhill from season one. So I guess to wrap up things, we always ask, after 10 years of re-examining it, to revisiting it, do you think that Attack on Titan should be revisited? Do you recommend it? How do you stand on it as, like, a series overall?
This one is really tough. I am going to, like, it is a, I'll be honest, it is a razor thin 0.1 per, maybe like 0.5%, maybe 1% full of me saying no. And of course, just like I said, I don't actually think it's that good of a show. I think that it kind of plays its hand within the first season and maybe like a little bit into season two, and you basically know where you're going from there. But having said that and kind of argued against it in basically for this whole time, the reason that I'm still like on the fence is a little bit to your point of we still need to see stuff like this. You should, like, I'm not for banning, because some of the ideas that are in here, the only way that you stop it in yourself, in your life, etc., is you kind of see it played out in these ways. Like, hey, you know, I see the seeds of Eren in X person in my life or in myself, whatever the case may be. Let me kind of look at that now that I've seen what that path could be. Now, obviously, none of us are going to just burst out into, you know, three-story tall Titan-killing machines and whatnot. But even still, like, the baselines of these characters, I do think can offer some, can be interesting and can be dissected in a positive way. But I do think you need to go in with a little bit of knowledge beforehand. Like, there needs to be some understanding that this is not going to go into a positive direction. But you should never need the pretext. So that's why I'm like on the more don't recommend.
Definitely straddling the line, because I would say that it is a story that I do consider a masterpiece. I don't think I'm open up to changing my mind about it, but I don't think I've heard anything that I didn't come prepared to defend against. So
yeah,
when it comes to saying something is a masterpiece, I'm not inherently saying I recommend it. So it's always been the case of like reviewing these series. It's like, yeah, what is a good one? What is a good anime that I can introduce people that don't watch anime to see? And then what is the anime that I can recommend to people that do watch anime? And this is one of those situations of I see a lot of other better animes that cover the same topics a little bit better, or at least
more deftly.
Definitely way. And it is that pretense. I think that's what you nailed about, is that I don't want to give a spoiler warning, but like a disclosure when it comes to anime recommendations. So it's like, okay,
yeah, well,
maybe you need to know a little bit about history, or maybe you need to have a solid understanding of like the ideologies of the writer, or the ideologies of the time, or you have to go into it knowing like, oh, this is definitely a politically charged anime, or like, oh, there's some backstories. Let me explain this to you before you actually watch it. So it's like one of those things, like, yeah, it's something that I'm glad I consumed, but it's definitely not for the age where you should have consumed it. Because again, this is in that dark area between what is a shonen and what's a seinen. Again, for older kids or for younger kids, it's like, this is good for adults. And this is one of those animes that I would show to people that say, oh, anime is cartoons or anime is for kids. I think those are the people that need to watch Attack on Titan. But I can't say without that prerequisite of, yeah, this is for an adult that doesn't know that anime can be this dark, you should watch it. This gets into levels of House of Cards political drama, or this gets dark like any horror that you might experience. Like you'll get attached. And there's things to think about. It's a good anime to generate discussions. But if I recommend it, it would be with a asterisk. It would be with a, oh, you have to be the certain kind of person that I know would already enjoy it. Or you would be someone that would be receptive to this. So it's like, okay, warning. It's not for kids. It's for, I can't show my kids at school or whatever, or teenagers. It's like, okay, maybe after university, or it's like, okay, this isn't an easy watch, or it isn't an easy rewatch. It's something that you have to digest, and binging it, it feels a lot more bingeable than probably other series that I've seen recently. But other than that, I'm going to say I side on the do not recommend. So like even a smaller point that you mentioned about the animation style, like this is done by Studio Wit before, and they went on to do like Great Pretender. Mm-hmm. And Vinland Saga. So it's like that heavy line animation, they kind of gotten over. But again, Attack on Titan is their first anime. So like their production.
And it shows.
Yeah, it shows, exactly. So, and then when it switched over to MAPPA, it's like people complain about the CGI, but I think that was definitely the right thing to do to switch studios. But yeah, for a first anime studio, the animation doesn't actually hold up. It does feel timed. It does feel like a not amateur production team, but it does feel like of the time. It's like, oh, this is something that has been phased out over the past couple of years, or has been improved upon by more recent technology improvements. So it's like, okay, animation, the characters, all the political stuff. It's like, I can't recommend it, but I'm glad I watched it, and I will watch part 3 when it comes out this year, and it'll wrap up. So
definitely watch part 3.
Yeah, when we'll finish, have a maybe better informed conversation later on to make this a part 2. But yeah, I'm going to say Attack on Titan for right now, until maybe I see the ending, the actual proper ending. It's a not recommend for me.
I love how you explain that. I'm not going to recommend it, because if I do recommend it, it needs an asterisk. I think that is the perfect way to look at it.
I'm glad, because that's how I feel after this conversation. I was going into this thinking like, oh yeah, I'm going to sell Eric on this masterpiece, and we're going to watch together next Saturday, rewatch it, like, yeah, enjoy it. But yeah, it's just a monumental thing, because we've only been talking for an hour 20, and it's just so much more to talk about And like we didn't even go into like all the spin-offs and the light novels and the video games and its appearance in Fortnite. So it's like a testament to like how big the franchise is, but it's also like, yeah, but also maybe kids shouldn't know about Attack on Titan and Fortnite, or Fortnite age kids shouldn't know about Attack on Titan yet.
Yeah, I definitely do not want my son anywhere near this anytime soon.
Right, like he's playing Fortnite and he's like, oh, Dad, who's that character? He's like, that's Eren Jaeger, my hero. It's like, oh, that's my shit. Nope. All right, cool. So it's a non-recommend for me, non-recommend for you, but maybe we'll come back and talk about it when it actually finishes up later this year. So we'll be celebrating its 10-year anniversary, or celebrating its 10-year anniversary by actually finishing up in 2023. So it's very interesting how that played out. It feels like that was a very coordinated event to happen. It's like, oh, Attack on Titan wraps up in its 10th year of publication. But that was the episode. So how did we do? Was it a good conversation?
This was great. I am so glad that you, that we had differing opinions. That was my, so I'll be honest, that was my worry. I was like, oh, I'm going to come into this and all of the stuff that I'm like reading, I don't really agree on the internet. Like, I don't really agree with. I think y'all are not really looking into stuff and you're just surface level. And so your complaints don't make sense. And then you throw out the masterpiece word and I'm like, oh boy, let's go. It's on.
Yeah, because I kind of group this in with like, at least in my head without talking to anyone or at least hearing what the internet says. Like, I count the Attack on Titan as mid opinion as the same thing as One Piece is too long opinion. It's like, okay, sure. Yeah. But what do you mean? It's like, okay, do you know like Pokemon is almost just as long, or Detective Conan and Case Closed and Doraemon? It's like, anime fans will have their opinions and they will say things. And I'm like, well, it's not an informed opinion. You can have your opinion. You can like and hate what you like, but it's like, where's the conversation? So I'm glad we had a conversation. That's the best part of it.
No, absolutely. And I do. And it was really fun that both of us kept bringing up outside examples that the other person that honestly kind of bolstered each other's arguments throughout as well. And I'll say it, like, this is more towards your way of thinking of like of holding this up as like being well written, is like the fact that it can spark that conversation is a credit to what has been put down into this series. I just would argue that it's not worth it. But definitely, like, yeah, but again, and also to your thing of like the internet saying like it's mid, it's like no. If something is mid, people don't argue at length about stuff that's mid. Stuff that's mid just dies. That is literally what that like should equate to. It's, you're literally average, you're not special, and that is not what Attack on Titan is. It is not mid.
My Hero Academia maybe is more mid, and I'm like, oh, I can't wait until it's over so I can stop talking and reading and watching it.
Yes.
That's the kind of thing about mid.
It's like, I am ready for it to end. Oh my god. All
right, maybe another cancelable statement. But Eric, thank you so much for coming on. I very much appreciate it. We'll get you back with another episode. If there's anything from 2014 that's off the top of your head, let's talk about it. But yeah, so that was our conversation on Attack on Titan 10-year anniversary.
Boom. Peace, everybody.
If you liked this episode, please like and subscribe. And until next time, peace.